Welcome to this special edition of In the Studio, the 21st Century series on the greatest recording artists in history. I'm Redbeard, and today, in the studio, we're all invited to stow away on a colorful musical voyage with Sting aboard the last ship.
As a mountain of steel makes its way to the sea, and the last ship sails.
You know, it's important to understand about the last ship, but it's not social history. It is an allegory about the importance of work or the importance of community.
It was him who was trapped in the soul cage, son. It was him who was trapped in the soul cage.
I really, for the first time in a long time, felt that I could use my, you know, skill as a songwriter just freely and openly without putting me in front of it. Because I was bored to death with me. And these songs came very quickly. Every time I sat down, they would pour out.
When the last ship sails.
Welcome back. In the studio, and I'm Sting with Redbeard, and he still has it.
During my first interview with Sting in 1979, and over the course of several subsequent interviews across his lengthy career, the contrasts and even contradictions of his numerous achievements appeared to be two sides of the same coin. As Chief of Police, as that band's main songwriter and singer, Sting helped them sell over 50 million albums worldwide. Yet, the Police made a sum total of only 5 albums. As a solo career recording artist, the new album, The Last Ship, will be Sting's 11th. The final Police album was released 30 long years ago, yet their recent 2007-2008 reunion world tour spectacularly became the third highest grossing concert tour in history. And while Sting's post-Police output was prolific, he hasn't released a new album in the last 10 years. So when you've been to the top of the mountain, repeatedly, what do you do to find your muse? A worthy creative challenge. If you're Sting, you plunge into the depths of your deep, dark, personal sea of memories to launch what turns out to be a very universal voyage. The symbolism of going home in literature, song, stage, and film is as ancient as Homer's Odyssey and as contemporary as Elton John and Bernie Taupin's latest. But the nautical nature of Sting's latest music is highly personal.
There's a romance about ships I've always had. I mean, my family have had something to do with ships for a long time. My great-great-grandfather was a master mariner. One of my grandfathers was a North Sea pilot. He would bring ships into the river from the North Sea. Another grandfather was a coal fitter. You know, he was a very highly paid worker, but put coal into ships, very dangerous work. He made a lot of money. My grandfather was a shipwright. And so I have this sort of family connection with ships. And then where I was born, you couldn't get away from a ship. It was like omnipresent. I do have an affinity with the sea. I'm terrified of the sea. I'm scared of the sea. But I like sailing. I like going out on a boat, but I'm also very respectful of that vast wilderness and the idea of storms at sea.
It's all there in the Gospels. The Magdalene girl comes to pay her respects, but her mind is a whirl when she finds the tomb empty. The stone had been rolled, not a sign of a corpse. In the dark and the cold, when she reaches the door, sees an unholy sight. There's this solitary figure in a halo of light. He just carries on floating past Calvary Hill in an almighty hurry. Aye, but you might catch him still. Tell me, where are you going, Lord, and why in such haste? I don't hinder me, woman. I've no time to waste, or they're launching a boat on the morrow at noon. And I have to be there before daybreak. Oh, I cannot be missing. The lads will expect me. Why else would the good Lord himself resurrect me? For nothing will stop me. I have to prevail.
through the teeth of this tempest, in the mouth of a gale. May the angels protect me if all else should fail and the last ship sails. O'er the roar of the chains and the cracking of timbers, the noise at the end of the world in your ears, as a mountain of steel makes its way to the sea, and the last ship sails. It's a strange kind of beauty, it's cold and austere, and whatever it was that you've done to be here, it's the sum of your hopes, your despairs and your fears, when the last ship sails. Well, the first to arrive saw these signs in the east, like that strange moving finger at Balthazar's feast, where they asked the advice of some wandering priest, and the sad ghosts of men whom they thought long deceased, and whatever got said they'd be counted at least, when the last ship sails. Oh, the roar of the chains and the cracking of timbers, the noise at the end of the world in your ears, as a mountain of steel makes its way to the sea, and the last ship sails. And whatever you promised, whatever you've done, and whatever the station in life you become, in the name of the Father, in the name of the Son, and whatever the weave of this life that you've spun, on the earth or in heaven or under the sun, when the last ship sails.
That's the title song to Sting's mythic musical tale, The Last Ship. If you've read his best-selling 2005 autobiography, Broken Music, it would be easy to assume that Sting's bold, epic narrative was an outgrowth of that project. But in fact, it started 15 years before.
Well, you know, it began much earlier in 1990, when I wrote an album called The Soul Cages, which had a kind of landscape which was of my hometown, of War's End. And writing it coincided with the death of my father. And as a metaphor, I used the death of the shipyards, you know, which I was born and raised next to. My early memories are of the shipyard and all the men going to work every morning, and I would deliver their milk. I knew a lot of them. Then I'd sell them newspapers on the way back up from Swan Hunters, and had this connection. My grandfather was a shipwright. The Soul Cages is a strange record, probably my least understood or accepted record, but it has a rolling constituency of the recently bereaved. And I get a lot of, you know, letters from people who say this record gives them some solace. And I didn't think any more about that. It had a kind of, it was a mood piece. It didn't have a narrative of any kind.
Poor Charlie's locked in the fisherman's yard, a bloodless moon where the oceans die. The shoal of night stars hang fire in the nets, in the chaos of cages where the crayfish lie. Where is the fisherman? Where is the goat? Where is the keeper in his carrying coat? A eclipse on the moon when the dark bird flies. Where is the child with his father's eye? He's the king of the ninth world. Son of the fog bells toll in each and every lobster cage, a tortured human soul. These are the souls of the broken factories, subject slaves of the broken ground.
Is an old folk tale which I remember from being a very small child. Maybe my grandmother told me it. And I think it comes from, it's a kind of Nordic folk tale. You know, where I come from is the northeast of England, which was populated essentially by Scandinavian invasions. And so you'll find this myth in the British Isles and also in Norway and Denmark and Sweden to a certain extent, where the souls of the dead are kept under the sea by an old fisherman in lobster pots. Lobster cages.
Ooh.
And to go and free the souls, you have to go under the sea and drink with the old fisherman, who's like the devil, you know? And if you drink him under the table, the souls go free. If he drinks you under the table, he keeps you forever in the cage, the soul cage. I just remembered this old myth and decided that it was a good metaphor for what I was trying to write about in this album, you know, which is about death and, you know, trying to mythologize my relationship with my father, you know, sort of make it heroic, put it on a bigger scale. I wrote this song, The Soul Cages, but it's a very powerful phrase. Then I began to think, oh, well, I wonder if there's a story to that we could tell that would use the soul cages as the starting point and then tell a story that could be a narrative, you know, with characters. And this thing also coincided with a very, very dry period for me as a songwriter. You know, I hadn't written songs in about 8 years, either because I'd lost the juice or I wasn't inspired to or I was afraid. I don't know. I was, you know, I make my living as a songwriter, so it's kind of worrying when that well runs dry. And as soon as I began to think of writing for other people, for other voices, for other characters, from other viewpoints apart from my own, this stuff started to flow because I wasn't in the way anymore.
And I drew up a list of characters I thought might be useful to tell a story. You know, people who worked in the shipyards, what they, their foremen, the platers, the welders. And then, I needed some kind of love story to go through it, and who were they. And I named these people, and then I started to write songs for them. And felt very free. I really, for the first time in a long time, felt that I could use my, you know, skill as a songwriter just freely and openly without putting me in front of it, because I was bored to death with me. And these songs came very quickly. Every time I sat down, they would pour out. The first one I wrote was the song Shipyard, which just has a list of characters, you know, the foreman and the communist rabble rouser and the woman who does the health and safety in the yard, and the yard intellectual. It's called Adrian. Not quite funny, but I wrote the last ship a little later than that, because I wanted this mythic idea of what the ship means. You know, what is it? So, you know, the first character that turns up is Jesus. resurrecting after 3 days on the cross, but only to go to Wall's End and see the ship launched. You know, that was so important. But the idea of the mythic importance of the launching of a ship, that people have to be there because it's the last ship and they need to, they have to be there. And so it's a comic, but it's also an attempt at creating a myth.
Ah, my name is Jackie White, and I'm foreman of the yard. And you don't mess with Jackie on this quayside. Why, I'm as hard as iron plate. Woe betide you if you're late, when we have to push the boat out on a spring tide. Now you could die and hope for heaven, but you'd need to work your shift, and I'd expect yous all to back us to the hilt. And if St. Peter at his gate were to ask you why you're late, why, you tell him that you had to get a ship built. We've built battleships and cruisers for Her Majesty the Queen, super tankers for Onassis and all the classes in between. We've built the greatest shipping tonnage that the world has ever seen. And the only life we've known is in the shipyard. All the platers and the welders and the boiler-making crews, when they see that beggar finished on the slipway, all the hardships soon forgot, and we'll cheer us like as not, and the bands will wave their Union Jacks all day. Oh, it's a periodic scene. All that's missing is the Queen, but you said you couldn't make it other Tuesday. Then something wells up here inside, and you could take it in your stride, but you wonder if you'll see another payday. For there's a mixture of emotions, hatred, gratitude and pride, and you hate yourself for crying, but it's difficult to hide. Well, there's a sadness in the leaving, and you worry what's ahead, and that worry never leaves you, keeps on nagging in your head. And so you pray to God for orders, but you'll worry till you're dead, until they bury your remains in the blacksmith's shed. And the only life you've known is in the shipyard.
Steel in the stockyard, iron in the soul, the conjure of a ship when I used to be a home.
And I don't know what we'll do if this yard gets sold, for the only life we've known is in the shipyard.
And I'm some steward for the Union. My dream is proletarian revolution.
Get out, Tommy.
Comrades, brothers, fellow travelers and others, class struggle is the means of dialectic evolution. Das Kapital's revival and the ruling class arrival, and Korn, Marx and Engels, it's entirely justifiable if the workers' revolution here is ever to be viable. And we become the rightful owners of the shipyard. So it's a one-day stoppage, or an overtime ban, or a work parole for the five-year plan, till the means of production are safely in our hands, and we become the rightful owners of the shipyard. I'm not saying it won't be hard if the boss answers me cards, when they try to close us down like other shipyards. And if industrial action only helps the competition, as I've heard the bosses bleating from my usual position, and I stand accused of anarchy, disruption and sedition, Well, you'll never knock us down, you reactionary clowns. Well, it's time for occupation of the shipyard.
I'd sooner put you in a splint than have them put you in the ground. And the fumes from all the welding where the poison air is hung, and the toxic radiation that's been blackening your tongue, I could give you all an aspirin while you're coughing up your lungs. But it's all you'll ever get here in this shipyard.
I like a drink or two. You could ask me when it started, but I haven't got a clue. I'm never sad or miserable, I'm never ever blue. And I'll still be up tomorrow for the shipyards. I drink myself into a stupor and I wake up with two heats. And then the missus starts complaining about all me drunken deeds. Like when I got the train to Sunderland but found myself in Leeds. And I had to get up early for the shipyards. I once gave up the drinking, was it 1963? But it seems as if sobriety was not the thing for me. It was the worst 3 hours I ever hoped to say.
And the ship sets sail and the tale gets told. And the only life I've known is in the shipyard.
And we don't know what we'll do if the yard gets sold.
The only life we've ever known is in the shipyard.
Shipyard, from the expanded two-disc deluxe version of Sting's The Last Ship, features vocals from veteran Jimmy Nail, Joe Lowry, and AC/DC's Brian Johnson. Here's the composer, Sting.
Well, Jimmy has been one of the prime movers of this whole thing, my inspiration in many ways. But we recruited Brian Johnson, the singer from AC/DC, who I knew when he was back in Newcastle in a band called Yellow. And even before that, it was in a band called the Gobi Desert Blues Band. I used to go and see them. I always thought he was a fantastic singer. So he came on board and sang a couple of songs.
Coming up on the next leg of the voyage of The Last Ship, Sting shares the vivid details of the hometown of his youth and the proud, hardworking family into which he was born. Follow In the Studio on Facebook, at Redbeard Rocks on Twitter, and additional Sting interviews at inthestudio.net. I'm Redbeard. You're in the studio with Sting aboard The Last Ship.
Welcome back. In the studio, and I'm Sting with Redbeard, and he still has it.
Thank you, old friend. When you begin to take the vivid imagery, strong characters, and rich dialogue of The Last Ship less literally, you'll begin to see that it's an allegorical tale of self-discovery and very dynamic relationships, not the least important being Sting's eldest son role to his father.
But, my dad wanted me to be a man like him and, perhaps have a job that he understood. I think his aspirations for me were to be, a working man, but, maybe a draftsman or something, something he could relate to. My aspirations were much more vague and ridiculous. I wanted to make a living as a musician. How could you possibly do that? So I think, in his defense, he worried for me. He thought I was a dreamer bound to fail. And, 99 times out of 100, he would have been right. I was just lucky. So Dead Man's Boots it dramatizes that conflict. I'm not going to wear your boots. I'm not going to be like you. I don't want to be like you. And that anger, and misconnection that generations have, fathers and sons, is something that I experienced, and regret. I regret the anger and the the struggle that we had. We could never quite connect, and you know, by the time I could connect with him, he was dead. And so that remorse is still omnipresent in my thinking. You know, so Dead Man's Boots is kind of about me and my dad.
You see these work boots in my hands? They'll probably fit you now, my son. Take them, they're a gift from me. Why don't you try them on? It would do your old man good to see you walking in these boots one day, and take your place among the men who work upon the slipway. These dead man's boots, though they're old and curled, when a fella needs a job and a place in the world, then it's time for a man to put down boots and walk to the river in his old man's boots. He said, I'm nearly done in asking this, but you do one final thing for me. You're barely but a sapling, and you think that you're a tree. If you need a seed to prosper, you must first put down some roots. Just one foot, then the other, in these dead man's boots. These dead man's boots know their way down the hill. They could walk there themselves, and they probably will. There's a place for you there to sink your roots, or take a walk down the river in these dead man's boots. I said, why in the hell would I do that? And why would I agree, when his hand was all that I'd received, as far as I remember? Isn't that as if he'd spoiled me with his kindness up till then, you see? I'd a plan of my own, and I'd quit this place when I came of age, September. These dead man's boots know my way down the hill. They can walk there themselves, and they probably will. I've plenty of choices, I've plenty of the roots, and he'd never see me walking in these dead man's boots. What was it made him think I'd be happy ending up like him, when he'd hardly got two halfpennies left or a broken pot to piss in? He wanted the same thing for me. Was that his final wish? He said, what the hell are you gonna do? I said, anything but this. These dead man's boots know their way down the hill. They're gonna walk there themselves, and they most likely will. But they won't walk with me, cause I'm off the other way. I've had it up to here, I'm gonna have my say. When all you got left is that cross on the wall, I want nothing from you, I want nothing at all. Not a pension or a pittance when your whole life is through. Get this through your head, I'm nothing like you. I'm done with all the arguments, there'll be no more dispute. And you'll die before you see me in your dead man's boots.
The Last Ship was composed by Sting to be a live theatrical musical production and is slated for Broadway in 2014. But unlike popular musicals from his peers Billy Joel with Movin' Out and Queen's We Will Rock You, Sting's The Last Ship will face a stiff creative headwind in that every song is completely new and unknown.
Because I know from experience, the most difficult thing for an audience, any audience, to accept, whether they're a fan of yours or not, is a new song. They can't quite hear it. They want to hear the stuff they know. So I thought, okay, I'm going to have to create a larger constituency for this material. So the best thing I can think of is to make an album myself of the songs, all of the songs. Put it out there so people have an idea of this landscape. They have an idea, and they can navigate this landscape better if and when they come to see the show. Also, for me, it's a way of utilizing the material that I've shaved from the songs versus songs that will not appear in the musical at all, characters that have been got rid of. I want to archive them for myself, and I think maybe people will find it interesting as a document of the process rather than the finished thing. So I've recorded about 25 songs. and it will hopefully be a piece that will stand alone, regardless of the play, as a part of my artistic need and my artistic process. I think if it would have no life beyond the play, then I'd feel bad about songs being missing from the play. But because I have this album, this cradle, or this graveyard, if you like, for songs that people can visit, then I feel much better about it. I feel, I've always said this mantra that good work is never wasted. You know, it always feeds back into the reservoir of what you do if you do it diligently. And, you know, I'm a diligent worker. So it's getting less difficult. At first it was difficult to see your work just thrown away. But, you know, I have a repository for it now.
The storm, the strain on the sunrise, disguised in the mist this morning, it's 8 a.m. A seagull shouts a sailor's warning. The sky, this bend in the river, slows down and delivers me. The tide rolls back and all my memories fade to black. And yet, I'm back. This town has a strange magnetic pull, like a homing signal in your skull. And you sail by the stars of the hemisphere, wondering how in the hell did you end up here? It's like an underground river or a hidden stream that flows through your head and haunts your dreams. And you stuff those dreams in this canvas sack, and there's nothing around here that the wide world lacks. And yet, you're back. Some nights I'd lie on the deck and I'd stare at the turning of the stars, those constellations hanging up there from the cables and the rigging. I'd wonder if she saw the same or managed to recall my name. Why would she ever think of me? Some boy she loved who fled to sea. And why waste time debating whether she'd be waiting for the likes of me? So you drift into port with the scum of the seas, to the dance halls and the brothels where you took your ease. And the ships left the dock, but you're half past caring, and you haven't got a clue whose bed you're sharing. And your head's like a hammer on a bulkhead door, and it feels like somebody might have broken your jaw. And there's bloodstains and glass all over the floor, and you swear to God you're drinking no more. And yet, in truth, it's too late to find her, too late to remind her at some garden gate, where a servant tells me I should wait. And perhaps a door slammed in my face, my head must be in outer space. And yet, before the sun has set, before the sea, there may be something else that's waiting for the likes of me. This town, the strain on the sunrise.
You know, you mentioned the song And Yet. I love And Yet, but it doesn't fit into the play. It doesn't, thematically it does, musically it doesn't. It doesn't quite do the trick. I knew a lot of lads who did go to sea, who would come back and tell me stories about places they'd visited, exotic places they'd visited, and how tough life was at sea and what it was like going through a storm and throwing up and, you know, and wanting to die and visiting brothels and, you know, all this incredibly exotic stuff. That life always seemed romantic to me. In fact, if my father gave me one piece of advice, it was go to sea. He wanted me to go to sea. I did eventually. I ended up as a singer on a cruise ship. But I did get a seaman's card because of that. I still have it. But I was never a sailor. But and yet, it's really that. It's the romance of the sea, you know, somebody coming back home with all of that stuff and then visiting home and, you know, wondering actually where he lives. Does he belong here anymore?
Just a castaway, an island lost that sea. Oh, gets my message in the bottle. Ooh, message in the bottle. Message in the bottle. Message in the bottle. A year has passed since I wrote my note. I should have known this right from the start. Only hope can keep me together. Love can mend your life, but love can break your heart. I'll send an assault.
exhibiting his metaphorical use of the sea from his earliest days as a songwriter. That's Sting, live in London in 1979, reportedly appearing solo for the very first time, performing his Message in a Bottle. Still to come, the folk music that traveled to every corner of the globe aboard the last ships. Follow In the Studio on Facebook, at Redbeard Rocks on Twitter, and many interviews of your favorite musicians at inthestudio.net. I'm Redbeard, with Sting setting sail aboard the last ship.
Welcome back. In the studio, and I'm Sting with Redbeard, and he still has it.
Sting, you're a real diamond geezer. You know, it's hard to pinpoint the beginning of the late 20th, early 21st century mainstream affinity for centuries-old English and Highlands folk music. Maybe it was the two mid-90s back-to-back blockbuster film soundtracks for Braveheart and then Titanic by James Horner. Though Fairport Convention, Steel Eye Span, Lindisfarne, Pentangle, and Ian Anderson of Jethro Tull, they've been integrating the pipes, the fiddle, and the squeeze box with contemporary instruments for decades now. Here's Sting to describe his creative choices for The Last Ship.
A lot of the melodies are very folk-based, you know, modal folk-based music. And I used to sing in folk clubs all the time. You know, before I was in jazz groups, I used to play in folk clubs. And I love the High Level Radders and Johnny Handel and those people. No, I have a lot of folk music in my history. But, it's probably well hidden. Not deliberately, but it's definitely there. A lot of the songs are rooted in that modal northeastern folk tradition, but it's blended with, you know, chromatic elements that are straight Richard Rodgers. So it's a kind of blend. But yeah, The Language of Birds really is a song about my father's generation. My father was born between the wars, you know, and I think that generation found it very difficult to express what they felt, express love particularly. It wasn't considered manly, you know. I think that generation was raised to be inured to the hardships of war, you know. And I was born in the 50s, and so I'd never had to be in a war. I think our generation has been very cosseted in that way. So in a sense, The Language of Birds is about that terrible paralysis that generation felt when they needed to hug you, but they couldn't, and they couldn't tell you that they loved you. But you knew it, they did, but they didn't have the expression, they didn't have the language.
They say there's an underground river that none of us can see. And it flows through winding tunnels on its way to a tidal sea. And across that sea is an island, a paradise we are told, where the toils of life are forgotten, and they call it the Island of Souls. For only a soul can go there, a soul that's been set free from the confines of our working life to find eternity. Our old man had a cage for his pigeons, but that's really where he kept his soul. And when he watched them fly, he would see himself. At least that's how it was told. But his soul was still trapped in the cage, son, while the birds they soared to the sky. He couldn't find his own way out, at least not till the day he died. Oh man builds a cage with the tools he's given. His casket is sealed with a riveter's gun. His solitary madness is where he is driven. It was him who was trapped in the soul cage, son. It was him who was trapped in the soul cage. Ah, more than he loved you, but he hadn't the words. Be easier speaking the language of birds. For to speak of emotion, it just wasn't done. It was him who was trapped in the soul cage, son. It was him who was trapped in the soul cage.
mind builds a cage with the tools he is given. His casket is sealed with our riveter's gun. This solitary madness is where he is driven. It was him who was trapped in the soul cage, son. It was him who was trapped in the soul cage.
Saying in the song that, you know, this guy was easier speaking to his pigeons than he wasn't speaking to his children.
That's Sting invoking the ancient legend of the soul cages, but modifying only slightly the emotional cages we lock ourselves into. Years before he would earn the nickname of Sting, a dramatic showdown, which could have altered young Gordon Sumner's fate, was averted quietly by the sensitivity of a loving mother and loyal wife.
I wondered what the hell I would do. You know, because I'd see men walk to work every day past my thousands of men coming down. And I wonder if that was what was in store for me. But the yard was a terrifying, noisy, dangerous place. I knew that. I didn't want it. But when I passed the 11 plus, for some reason, I passed to go to a grammar school. And my old man, he filled the form out and he put me down for technical school. And I said, I don't want to go to the technical school. He said, but you'll learn technical drawing. You'll learn, you know, to work a lathe. You could be a draftsman. It'll be a trade. And in this other school, they'll teach you Latin. And, you know, and I said, that's what I want. He said, but why? And he'd filled it in. And we had a big row. I was 11. He went off to the pub and my mother said, come here, we'll fix the form. So we fixed the form. We got a piece of white paper and stuck it over where he'd put the technical school. And we put the grammars, because I went to Newcastle to the thing. And I got taught French and Latin. I'm not sure what good it did to me, but that's what I wanted. I wanted something vague. And he wanted something specific. So I may have ended up in the yards, or I may have ended up in a factory. Or he worked for Delarue. He worked as an engineer's fitter. So that was his world. He didn't understand what my needs were, even to the end. You know, he often wondered when I was going to get a proper job. I was just singing and just wasting my life. There was no blueprint for what I eventually did apart from the Beatles. You know, the Beatles came along in 1963 when I was 12, and they were from Liverpool, which is a similar environment. They were grammar school kids, and they wrote their songs and they conquered the world. So that gave people of my generation, you know, 10 years younger than them, permission to try. Some of us succeeded. But where the confidence came from to actually pull that off, I do not know. No idea.
I have got to be Jordan, you're taking the piss. I'd have to be stupid. Go on with this. I wasn't born yesterday, or even last week. It's someone with sailing experience you seek. I wouldn't sail with yous on the last ship aground in a biblical flood. I'd be better off drowned. So drink up your bevies and have a good sup. I'm no part of this fancy O'Brien's dreamed up. Find some other idiot to pilot your craft. And tomorrow I'll be sober. Hide away with your soul. You know you got no, you got nothing at all. Hide away, you're just pissing your beer up the wall. And you're out of your tiny minds. Had a friend on the ships, his name was Joe Dorsey. He'd get into port, he'd be straight to the horses. He begged and he pleaded, he was some operator. 600 to 1, and he'd pay me back later. He claimed it was certain that we'd be in clover. And the next time we sailed past the white cliffs of Dover, we'd be sailing a yacht of our own to the Med. I lent him the money, I was out of me head. I didn't see hide of him,
or 9 months, maybe 10. And didn't that bastard just ask me again? For the loan of a tenner, he'd pay me back soon. All the money he owed me, I answered the loan. Had away, had away, had away with yours all. You know you got nothing, you got nothing at all. Had away, you're just pissing your beer up the wall. And you're out of your tiny minds. I once had a girl down in Tenerife, a passionate courtship, albeit brief. But what happened next, it just beggared belief. If I tell you, you'll be sober the second night in. She claims she's with child. Afore yesterday night, she'd been pure, undefiled. I must be the father, court papers she'd filed. So I tell her me rovers. Had away, had away, had away with yours all. You know you got nothing at all. Had away, you're just pissing your beer up the wall. You think you got a kiss, you got sweet bugger all. And you're out of your tiny minds. And you're out of your tiny minds. And you're out.
Had away means away with you. You know, you're crazy, you're out of your mind. And that song's not on the musical either, but I think it's going to be on the record because it's one of my favorites, actually.
Still to come in hour two, the last ship sails into uncharted emotional and societal waters with Sting at the helm to navigate the shoals of solitary songwriting versus collaboration, the power of women, finding your past inescapable, betrayal, forgiveness, and finally, gratitude. Follow In the Studio on Facebook, on Twitter at Redbeard Rocks, online at inthestudio.net. I'm Redbeard, in the studio with Sting as captain of the last ship. Don't go away.